So here's a funny thing. When it comes to banging, like explosions, with me, if it came to a certain point where if I didn't hear an explosion, mm-hmm. I started to worry. Mm-hmm. I need to hear those explosions, knowing that the Air Force, Margemot, tanks are all doing their job, because there were many nights where it was silence. And that's when I woke up in the middle of the night. I'm like, why? Mm-hmm. Where are the explosions? I need to hear explosions. Yeah. So it's interesting where if some people do hear explosions, they freak out. If I don't hear explosions, I start to freak out. My name is Adam. I'm 36 years old. I'm a reservist. My military career is one of 15 years already, 16 almost. I'm married for 16 years. 4 kids, Baruch Hashem. I'm a data analyst of 7 years already. Recently, like a month before the war, I lost my job due to cutbacks and immediately got drafted on the 7th of October. So I didn't really have time to think about like, oh, what do I do with my job now? Immediately, it's okay. My life is on hold. Hopefully, after we finished and completed our mission, the idea is to go back to civilian life, where I need to now work on my CV, remember what Excel is and SQL and Python is, and remember all that, and to try to go back into civilian life. It sounds easy. Oh, just, you know, do what you do, but it's kind of hard to remember functions, Excel, SQL, all this language where your mindset for the last 4 months was basically war. Now my new mission is to go back into civilian life and to support my family as much as I can.
Let's start with how you heard about what was going on the 7th of October and the events following that.
Right. Well, we were all together at shul, basically partying and having a nice time. And at some point, the rabbi stopped all the dancing and spoke about, we all hear what's going on down south, and I'm someone who is completely closed off when it comes to news. I don't look at the news. I don't have any social accounts, so I have no idea what he's talking about. I'm like, you know, dancing with my kids, and it's like, wait, what? And the second he said what's going down south, I kind of look around, and I'm looking for Israel, right? He's like, where is he? And then someone comes to me, I think one of my kids, and he says, so Yisrael told us to tell you, get ready. Mm-hmm. And I said, oh, okay, that's a little weird. But okay, so the rabbi said, we're going to do a little prayer, some tehillim for what's going down south. Let's hope everything's going to be okay. We get home, and I wait till Motei Shabbat, like totally oblivious to what's going on, thinking it's kind of weird. I opened up my phone and it's blasted with so many messages, and immediately my phone rings. I answer it. It's someone from my unit. He says, get down south now. Take your clothes, take everything, all your gear now. And I'm like, whoa, 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 whoa. Like, what's going on? He's like, it's war. Like, he knows I'm disconnected. He knows I don't know anything. And he says, listen, just trust me. Take all your stuff and come. So I was a little shaken by it. I'm the kind of guy who likes to get my order. I said, listen, with all due respect, I'm going to wait for my order. The second I say that, I get a message, you know, Chayal Yakar, Huf'alta Becherum, Huf'alta Becherum. I'm like, all right, I'll see you soon. And that was, we didn't even expect this. My army bag was buried so far deep in my machzan. It took me, I think, an hour just to find the bag and make sure I have everything. And immediately I got hitchhiked away to my base.
And you, at that point, you still went, did you check the news? Had Anya seen the news? Had you heard about roughly what was going on?
Or? Didn't check the news. My friend just said, listen, we were hit. We were hit hard. And this is something you just, you know, don't say, oh, it'll be fine. It's another rocket towards Derot. He says, no, this is something that changes everything. Mm-hmm. I didn't understand the gravity of the situation when he said that. But when I got to base and I saw the amount of people that were there, it was there were 140% geese. That means usually on a regular reserved answering call, you get maybe 30%, 50%. Over here is 140%. Everyone came, even people who weren't called. They said, I'm just coming. I need help somehow. It was packed. The amount of cars that were near the base, 2 kilometers before the base, 2 kilometers after the base, just packed with cars. That's when I realized, okay, this is big. This is really, really big.
Something I heard from someone recently that was treating soldiers that came, were coming out of Gaza, when they sat down with her. Initially, she was saying to them, how are you? And eventually, she realized how ridiculous that question was. You can't ask someone that's been through what they've been through, how are you? So she started to open the conversation with, have you seen any miracles? And so I'm posing that question to you, Adam. Have you seen any miracles?
Well, without sounding obnoxious, I am a walking miracle. I was in a situation where I basically should be dead. And the situation goes like this. The house we were in was exposed, and we were hit by an RPG. Now, this RPG is an Al Yassin RPG made by the Palestinians, by Hamas. It has 2 detonators. One, it's basically a tank killer. It hits the tank, opens up a little hole in the tank, and then explodes. But they don't use it for tanks. They mostly use it for personnel. So you have the first explosion that opens up a hole in the wall, and then the other explosion continues inside the room, exploding about 1.4 kilos of explosives. And it blew up 1 meter above my head. And I'm not a demolition expert, but they taught us that with every explosive, there's a death radius and there's a injury radius. For a grenade, I think it's 8 meters. Anyone in that radius will die from shrapnel, from shockwave, anything. It was 1 meter above my head. It went in the first room, blew up, continued to the second room where I was doing whatever I was doing, and it blew up right above my head. I remember the immense pain where my body just shook. I fell to the ground, didn't really realize what was going on. It took a second or two to understand. I'm looking and there's fire all over the ground. And then that's when the firing squad start shooting. They first fire the RPG, then they start shooting with the Kalach. And you can see how the bullets are hitting the floor.
You're talking about Hamas?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's how they attack. Mm-hmm. They first fire the RPG, and then they start firing at you with regular bullets. Mm-hmm. And I see the bullets ricochet everywhere, and I don't really understand what's going on. I look for my friends. I run between the bullets. I see everyone is fine, and then we return fire, and when the whole situation is over, it took us like 1 hour to collect ourselves, to go back to the site, and then we looked around. We all positioned ourselves to where we were to understand what happened. I have a friend who was 2 meters next to me. He got hit right in the head with shrapnel, and he's out. He's alive, but he's out. Another friend who... we looked at where he was sitting down, and there was a ton of bullet holes where he was, and he managed to dodge. And then we were looking at where I was, and everyone's looking at the hole where it blew up, and they're looking at me, and they're looking at all the damaged area, and they kind of looked. They're like, "How are you not dead?" And I said, "I don't know." My commander was sure I was filled with adrenaline. He stripped me naked. He said, you're probably filled with shrapnel. You're going to bleed out and die. He stripped me naked, not a scratch. No shrapnel, no internal bleeding from the shockwave. The most I had was hearing loss, which, thank God, it took, I think, 2 months to regain. But it doesn't make any sense. I went to multiple doctors. And they all ask the same question, how are you still alive? And I have no answer besides the grace of God. And I even spoke to people in my unit who are atheists, who don't believe in God, chilonim, people, they're like, it was luck. And I say, okay, We both saw what happened, right? We all went back to the house. Is that luck? Is that statistics? And he says, that's improbable. You should be dead. And I said, Hashgacha Pratit. He says, call it as you will, but it is extremely weird. I should be dead. And I think about this every day because lots of people say, okay, so for me, this was God throwing a biblical level miracle at me. And I think to myself, well, why me? So, you know, all those other soldiers who I think about them every day who were injured, who died in battle, and for some reason, God chose to take this huge miracle and just put it on me, like this bubble of protection. Till this day, I don't know why, but it doesn't make sense logically, it doesn't make sense physically, nothing. So that is the biggest miracle I've experienced. I have more miracles that I've seen and that I've heard of. I like to record them and put them down. Miracles I heard from other people, it's like, oh, I don't know, because people exaggerate. But things that happened to me or things that happened to a friend of mine who later could tell me the story is something I take to heart. If you right. like, I can tell you.
I think we want to hear everything. Everything you've got, we'll hear. How long have you got?
So there was this one day, everyone's standing outside. We have Ya'alom, we have Shaldag, we have Oketz, we have us, all these huge, amazing units. And we're all standing together. We're about to go in to do this thing we need to do. But right now we're all standing outside. People are smoking. People are talking. We believe we're in a safe zone. And we were. There are explosions everywhere all the time. We don't care because you get used to it. And then out of nowhere, you hear like a shh, boom, and something falls right next to us. And we kind of look. It's like, what fell from the sky? And some guy looks at it. It's this huge ball, a fist-sized metal ball. Mm-hmm. He comes to pick it up because he doesn't know what it is. And he burns his hands. It's a huge shrapnel from an explosion that exploded next to us, and it missed all the soldiers. We're standing shoulder to shoulder. If it was a millimeter close to someone's shoulder, it would have ripped his shoulder off. Head, gone. Foot, ripped off. And we were bunched together, and it missed everyone. We were over 30 soldiers over there, and it missed everyone. Wow. I was there. I saw that. I was like, that just, what is?
Amazing.
You can call it a miracle. I call it a miracle. Some people just say, oh, you're lucky. You're at the right place at the right time. We're in Gaza, so the wrong place at the right time. But how can you, there's a certain extent of statistics you can say until you're like, yep. All right, what's going on? I mean, I had friends who looked at me and they're like, they didn't want to admit it, but they said, okay, maybe there is something. That's all I'm going to say. And I said, you know what? That's good enough for me, man. I mean, I have another friend who, he's not religious, but he defined miracles with the smallest things. We were running from one building to another, and there were bullets flying between us. You could hear them. You could see them as they hit the ground. And I run to the other building, and we finish our dilug. And I was like, wow, that was pretty scary. He's like, dude, that was a miracle. It's like, what are you talking about? That we just, that's war. He's like, no, man. The odds of us not getting hit right now? And it's like, I don't know. I'm a religious guy, and I didn't deem that a miracle. But he did. In Gaza, you see all these things, and if you just stop and think, what are the odds for that happening? I have a friend who was in a building, and he saw an RPG hit right in front of him. I spoke to him, and he was a little shaken, and he said, what if he aimed a little better? Just maybe half a meter to the right, he would have hit him and killed him, totally. And you just see it as a regular thing. I have a friend who went to get food, and as he goes out of nowhere, from the ground, of course, comes a Hamasnik with an RPG. And it's like, you never think of these things happen. You can die from anything. You can die by doing nothing. I have a friend who broke his foot because a wall fell on him. You're dealing with, everything is destroyed over there, everything. And he was just walking, and a wall fell on his leg, shattered his leg. You heard the story of the soldier, God rest his soul, that died from a disease, from a pitria, right? There was a kid who, one of his wounds were infected, and that's it. You never think of what can get you. Everyone thinks, oh, I'm going to go to war, and if I go, I go in the most hopefully miraculous way against the enemy, and it can be by the dumbest things.
You mentioned you've been home for a couple of weeks, did you say? 2 weeks.
2 weeks, yeah.
Wondering about the experience of your family going through this, how they've adapted and what it's been like for them.
Right. Well, for my wife, Anya, she's basically, she's a broken person. She's devastated. I mean, she's happy that I'm home, but it just wasn't easy for her at all. And you can see it where, I mean, she's just like, she's tired. She just can't handle it anymore. Knowing that I may go back is just keeping her in a vague situation. Knowing that I was injured the way I was injured and I'm alive only by the grace of God, and all my kids, you know, God forbid, but statistically they should be orphans now. It's devastating for her. She can't really handle it. And, you know, I'm trying to be there as much as I can, but it's, I don't know how to be there for her, but it's really hard for her. For the kids, I think they're all right. I mean, I don't know if they truly understand what it means that, you know, Abba's gone. I mean, I would leave for a month for regular reserves. I've been doing this for 15 years already. So they're like, okay, so he's in the army and he'll come back whenever he comes back.
Presumably during those reserve duty call-ups, you had constant communication and contact.
Yeah.
And this was probably very different.
It was. It was. So every time I got my phone back, they were overjoyed. They were excited. Funny thing is, on the kid I saw the most, the change, was on my baby Aviel. He's 2 years old. And I hear from the Ganenet, he became aggressive. He's biting. He's uncontrollable. And also, whenever he sees me on uniform, you can see something's happening to him. He's looking at me like, oh, wait a minute. You're leaving. You're going. And the first time I came back from the army, he saw me, and there was this, like, I think it was 21 days after, and then they gave us like 48 hours to rest at home, and then we went back in. So I saw him, I picked him up from gun, and he's like he didn't want to run to me, he's like, wait a minute, it's like, that's, you're my dad, which was weird. I mean, you think 21 days isn't that much, but when it comes to not seeing, not talking, and suddenly there's like this distance, and it affected him severely. It probably affected all my other kids. I just don't know how yet.
Right.
It's funny. Like I asked my friend who was with me, I said, do you think we'll have PTSD? And he said, I don't know if we'll have PTSD, but we're going to have lots of tics. And I said, what are you talking about? He says, you'll see. So there's this one day, some guy took a picture of something. This is already after the war. And the flash made me like aware, like there's an explosion that's about to happen. And then when I realized there was just a flash, I'm like, ah, there are the ticks. So maybe my kids will also have ticks. I just need to see them. I just need to be more aware of their subconscious emotions, which is something that I have no idea how to do. But I just need to be more aware of their emotions, which is something I need to work on. There is this video where when I was done with the army, I surprised my daughter at school. And I saw her, I hugged her, and she just started bursting out crying. I didn't expect it. I'm like, all right, I'm back, right? And something, when I said, that's it, I'm done, she, something just let loose, and she let it all out. So I need it's the small things when you realize something's changed. The kids aren't the same. The question is, do we work with it and continue, or do we like ignore it? And that's something I would do. What? Emotion? No. Shove that back to the back door. I don't need that stuff now.
Adam, we're like the 22nd century, the 23rd century. We don't brush emotions under the carpet. It's all about feelings. Got to talk things through. You got to talk about feelings, you know, get it all out there.
I don't know. After the war, they did a psych session with all the snipers to see how we feel, how would it affect us, if we're losing our mind, if we're having nightmares. And I think I'm the only one or one of the few that were like, I'm okay. Lots of people are taking it differently. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to speaking out your emotions, it's something I'm not used to, but I realize I have friends who are starting to lose it. It's weird. I mean, maybe as a religious Jew, I see it as a full-on mitzvah. I see like every time I'm there, it's a huge mitzvah. It's a privilege to do the work of God and to help Am Yisrael, and you suddenly feel important and you're doing something that you know is the best thing, and it doesn't even need justification because the world is behind you, Am Yisrael is behind you, and it's amazing to do this work. I don't feel any shame or any horror or any waking up in the middle of the night. It was a privilege. The problem is going back home and becoming a nobody. That's the problem, right? I come back home and it's like, all right, I'm not a soldier anymore. I'm not doing anything useful with my life. I mean, though that time in Gaza, as hard as it was, I mean, you feel like every step I'm making is a mitzvah. Everything I'm doing is a mitzvah. And today now it's like, oh, I need to brush my teeth now. That's not a mitzvah. I need to, I don't know, get my kid ready for school. That's not a mitzvah. Okay. I do see, though, a huge hope with Am Yisrael. The fact that we came together the first few weeks when we were getting ready for war, I was at the base, and so many people just come and, you know, help out with food and equipment, and they don't need to do this, right? And the much love from Am Yisrael that we got was something I've never seen in all my 15 years of, you know, army career. It was amazing. I know that every war, everyone's like, oh, Am Yisrael Chai, but over here it was different. It was insane, the amount of love we got. And you look at it and you realize there is hope for Am Yisrael. You know, Chiloni, Dati, atheist, it doesn't matter. I mean, we're Am Yisrael. And that's when I saw an amazing unity between us. It was amazing. You feel like an Am. I truly believe like what Am Yisrael felt as they left Egypt, as we're reading in the parasha, they must have felt like we are one, leaving Egypt, being starting a new life together. No one's against the other one. That's what I felt here throughout this whole war, as everyone wants just to help one another. Doesn't matter if it's the expense on him, he's fine with it. If he'll, you know, help with his own personal expense, anything. And it was amazing. I've never seen Am Yisrael so together like I've seen in the past 4 months. Something that happened so briefly, and just a few weeks, you would think that, okay, so it's a war and you experienced something, but did that change you as a person? Like there are a few things I can tell you for a fact that shaped my personality. It was the mechina I went to where I studied Torah before the army. It was my parents. It was, of course, my wife and all these things. But did 3 months really change me? And when you think about it, like, to a certain extent, it did. Like, I'm someone who doesn't like to give myself anything, like no prizes for myself. I'll take like the money and I'll spend it on my kids or on my wife or the house, but not on myself because I just either don't deserve it or just it's a waste of money. But after the war, I'm like, you know, maybe I'll do that kite surfing course, or maybe I'll just take that time off and go to ski with my friends. Because
YOLO, you only live once.
Yeah, I didn't want to say that. I didn't want to say that.
Listen, if anyone can say that, you can.
But
you've been given a second chance, Adam. Let's go for it.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah. I mean, it's not like I want to say like, oh, I became more religious or more spiritual. I was already, to an extent, I mean, I am a very religious person, very ma'amin. Mm-hmm. So that didn't change. The most that changed is that every night when I daven Shmona Esre, I don't ask for anything anymore. It's just thank you. That's all. No more asking. I know like you already gave everything to me. So right now, just thank you. Don't need to ask for anything else. This is my Tefillah Shmona Esrei. It may be really quick, right? I finished Tefillah Shmona Esrei really fast because it's all thank you. That's it. Thank you.